in Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Valérie Chapuis. Last week, the Archdiocese of Montreal signed a 50-year lease with the Pointe-Claire Heritage Preservation Society, a non-profit organization, to restore and protect the historic Pointe-Claire windmill. The city of Pointe-Claire has also pledged support. The windmill, built by the priests of Saint-Sulpice back in the early 1700s, is one of the oldest in North America. It has been the civic symbol of Pointe-Claire since 1911. It was also designated as a heritage site by Quebec's Ministry of Culture and Communications in 1983. Though it's been repaired before, it's now in need of restoration due to damage, including a roof leak and broken sails. The restoration aims to preserve this historical landmark and turn the site into a cultural hub that offers tours and educational programs. The project is being funded by private donations, with plans to raise additional funds through further campaigns. This week, the mayors of Montreal, Quebec City, and Laval are heading to Washington, D.C. to join other city leaders for a Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Alliance event. During the event, around 30 mayors will discuss how to build ties between Canadian and American cities. This year, the event will be held in the wake of the new tariff dispute between the two countries, with the U.S. imposing a 25% tariff on Canadian goods. Montreal Mayor Valérie Plante told the Canadian press that the mission to Washington is an opportunity to warn American elected officials that the tariff war will hurt both countries' economies. This trip follows several efforts by Canadian leaders to show the U.S. the broader economic consequences of these tariffs. Monday, March 3rd marked the 150th anniversary of the first official indoor hockey game played in Montreal in 1875. The game took place at the Victoria Rink, where the Centre Sheraton Hotel now stands. This event is considered the beginning of modern ice hockey. To celebrate, Mathieu Lacombe, Quebec's Minister of Culture and Communications, announced that the 1875 game will now be recognized as a historic event under the Cultural Heritage Act. A commemorative plaque was also unveiled. Christian Labbé, head of Hockey Quebec, voiced his pride in the sport's history and its importance to Quebec's identity and culture. The anniversary follows Quebec's recent decision to officially recognize hockey as the province's national sport. For more, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO, 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. And it's finally starting to get a bit warmer outside, thank God. I can't believe it was a few weeks ago we had all that snow coming down. Now it's dry, it's warm, and I'm getting into the spring and summer mood, which is great. Hope everyone's doing well. We have a bunch to cover here over the next hour on the Tommy John Show. We have big news in the NFL, the Bengals signing their two star wide receivers to four-year extensions. We'll get into that. Indian Wells wrapped up over the weekend, the first ATP 1000 for the men's. We'll get into that. We'll also get into the women's final as well. The Players Championship concluded this morning with a three-hole playoff. We'll get into that. And, of course, the NHL and NBA, they're making their final push towards the postseason. Oh, and I forgot one thing. March Madness tips off Thursday. The bracket came out yesterday, so we will get into who I like to make a run to the Final Four and to the National Championship. We will get into all of it over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. But remember to follow us at the Tommy John Show on Instagram and TikTok. So why don't we start off quickly just running through the quick scores. Then I'll briefly tell you guys my thoughts on T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase signing four-year deals. Then we'll get into the March Madness. So what a week, 2 weeks it was at Indian Wells. You had upsets right away. You had the number one seed, Sasha Zverev, losing. You had Djokovic losing early. Casper Ruud, the four seed, losing early. And if I were to tell you at the start of the tournament, at least on the men's side, that Jack Draper and Holger Rune would be in the final, you would look at me funny. Not saying they're not good players. They're very capable, and they have elite, elite-level ability. But the inconsistency from Holger Rune has just been outrageous his whole career. He either makes it to a final like this, or he loses in the first round, 6-love, 6-love. He's very Tsitsipas-like. It's even when he's high, he is high. But when he's in the dumps, my goodness, it is hard to watch. So he was playing great this whole weekend. He stunned Medvedev on Saturday, winning in straight sets. He was just having a really good tournament. Yes, did he get good breaks in the draw? Of course. But you still have to beat who you're playing. And he beat Tsitsipas. He beat Medvedev. Sure, he beat Griekspoor. But he had to get to the final, and he did. You can only play who's next. And it's not his fault that Zverev lost early. Not his fault Ruud lost early. Not his fault Djokovic, Rublev, they all lost early. Not his fault. But still, he made it to an Indian Wells final, which is great for him. Very talented player. Let's see what it does for him in the future. And then Jack Draper played maybe the best tennis of his career. He's had injury issues in the past, but he looked phenomenal this whole week. And his big moment was Saturday against Alcaraz. That was it. He absolutely cruised through the first set, and then Alcaraz came back and punched him in the mouth, 6-love in the second set, and it was a third set decider, and Draper got it done. And he's an interesting story because we were always looking at who was going to be the next great British tennis player post Andy Murray. He's only 23 years old. He's 23. And now he has an Indian Wells under his belt. He's going to be playing with a lot of confidence. Now, is he going to do well on the French Open? It's not really his surface, but we'll see. He's now a top 10 player, so he's going to get favorable draws. But it's going to be interesting. With Miami right around the corner starting this week, he's going to be a factor for sure. And trust me, he's circling Wimbledon. He is circling Wimbledon. He's playing this well. I just won Indian Wells. I beat the two-time defending champion in the semifinal and then just annihilated Rune in the final. He has so much confidence. So much confidence. So he's going to be a huge storyline to look out for because right now it's pretty much Sinner, but he's suspended, and Alcaraz are the big two. Djokovic is getting up there in age. Rude's not having a great season. Medvedev so up and down, but right now he's down. And then the big story would be who's going to come into that fold. And it looks like Jack Draper could be one. It could be. Shapovalov's playing great. He just got a bad draw with Alcaraz, but he's won nine of his last 10 or 12 matches. So he's playing good tennis. He went from like 50 to 25. So he's making a jump. But who can challenge those two guys? And it looks like Jack Draper might be the guy. It really does. Only 23 years old. He's a big guy, 6'4". But he hits the piss out of the ball, if I can say that. So it's going to be interesting to see where his season goes from here. You win Indian Wells. There's no sitting on that title for a bit. You go right into Miami. Then it's the clay court season. But in, a few months, you got Wimbledon, and the UK fans are going to be behind Jack Draper because they haven't had that star to root for since Andy Murray. So it's going to be interesting, but a hell of a performance from Jack Draper. He's going to be a good player if he stays healthy for a long time. We go to the women's side, and my goodness, we have a superstar right now. And yes, Sabalenka is a great player. She's number one player in the world, and she deserves to be. But this Mira Andreeva, my goodness, she's 17 years old. And she just shocked the world pretty much. If you didn't know who she was winning tournaments earlier in the year. I think she had some success over in the Middle East. But look, like, who she beat to get to the final. She beat Rybakina. She beat Svitolina. She beat Iga Swiatek. And then she beat Sabalenka. So she beats the one seed, the two seed. Svitolina's a major, who's been in major finals before. Rybakina, I think, won Wimbledon a few years ago. This was not an easy draw. Was not an easy draw. And she goes out there and she beats Iga, who's had tremendous success in the semifinals, tremendous success at Indian Wells. And then Sabalenka, after the first set, I got worried for Andreeva, she comes right back 6-4, 6-3 to win the next two sets. And we're looking at a future number one player in the world. Like, let's be honest, the talent is undeniable. And with this win now, she's up to number six in the world, and you got to like her chances in Miami. She's made the French Open semis before. You got to like her chances in the clay court season. She's just a extremely talented, well-rounded player. And you got to watch out for her. Like, she's going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal player. 17 years old, and she's already doing this. She's going to turn 18 in a month or so, but still, doesn't matter. She is a fantastic talent. She's well on her way to being world number one in a few years. She's won two WTA 1000 events already. So it's going to be interesting. And remember, you see a lot of the time when women players, when they hit 17, 18, 19, 20, they just go on a tear. And it looks like Mira Andreeva is going to do that. She's fantastic. So what a performance from her. I liked her coming into the tournament. I said she's been on fire. I like her chances, but I didn't know if she would have the stuff to beat Sabalenka or Iga back-to-back matches, and she did. She did. Fantastic win. And now we head to Miami, which kicks off later in the week. I believe this Friday, Thursday is when you start getting the main draw matches. So those two tournaments give us a little bit of a tennis fix until we get into the clay court season. Then it really starts coming in April and May, June, July, August. It's a great time for tennis. So Andreeva and Draper, the two winners at Indian Wells. The Players' Championship concluded this morning at 9 a.m. It was a tie. Both Rory McIlroy and J.J. Spahn tied at 12 under par to win the so-called fifth major on the in the world of golf. And Rory had chances yesterday, but as is usually the story, the putter gets a bit cold, and he had several chances to win. And he had a three-shot lead. Then he lets a shot slip on 14. He had an easy birdie putt on 15 yesterday. He missed. And then he was kind of grinding the last three holes, this tough stretch of golf, 16, 17, 18. Somehow, two putts from 70 feet to get in at 12 under. J.J. Spahn, great birdie at 16 yesterday. Got him to a tie of the lead, and he just had to birdie one of the two holes down the stretch on 17-18 to win the Players. Could not do it. He left a birdie putt on 18 right in the heart, just a bit short. So they had to come out early this morning because of the weather, and it was really Rory playing smart golf, and J.J. Spahn, his inexperience got away from him. He hit it into the rough on 16, just a weird layup. It almost goes in the water, into the bunker. Then it was not a good bunker shot at all. Left himself about 20 feet for birdie. He did not make that. Made par. Rory made birdie at the par 5. Then you go to 17, maybe the most famous hole in golf, one of them, the Island Green. Rory pulls out a 9-iron, said he was practicing that shot the whole morning on the driving range because that is the shot that makes or breaks the tournament. If you're hitting in the water, even if you birdie 16 and 18, you're in deep trouble. So he hits a great 9-iron into the middle of the green, and J.J. Spahn, for some reason, maybe saw Rory take a 9-iron, takes an 8-iron, hits it into the water. Then he has to take his drop, hits it about 50 feet away, gets on the other side of the ridge. Now he's putting across the green. Instead of putting, he tries chipping. He chips it to about 10 feet, misses the putt. He makes triple bogey. And that was pretty much it after that. That was the tournament. On 18, they both bogey. Who cares? Rory wins the Players' Championship, the second time he has won the Players' Championship. And you got to think this is going to be a good year for him. He's already won twice on the PGA Tour prior to April. That has never happened in the lead up to the Masters. Won at Pebble Beach in February. Wins at the Players, the biggest tournament so far in the season. They call it the fifth major. It's that big of a tournament. And he wins his second Players Trophy. And guess what? I could not believe this. The only players to win multiple majors and Players titles, they're saying on the broadcast, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, Scottie Scheffler, and now Rory McIlroy. So what? It was a great weekend of golf. That golf course is so exciting. Just so much water everywhere. And those final three holes are really, really entertaining. Here was Rory after getting the win on St. Patrick's Day, nonetheless, his second Players title, his 28th PGA Tour win. Here was Rory after winning the playoff this morning.
As we send you down to Carbanks.
Well, Rory, it took one more day than you would have liked, but you are the 51st Players champion and making the Irish happy on St. Patrick's Day. Arguably the toughest conditions we have had all week this morning. How did you have to adjust for this playoff?
Yeah, wind coming out of a completely different direction. I'm just glad we didn't have to play 18 in that. Three was enough. I feel bad for JJ. You know, that was, he hit a really good shot on 17 and it just went straight through the wind. I was lucky to do enough to get it done, but unbelievably proud and happy to win my second Players Championship. And I think this is the third time I've won on St. Patrick's Day, so it's been a good luck charm for me.
The luck of the Irish. Just a couple things. We were really impressed with how decisive you were of your club selection on the 17th tee. How confident were you that the 9-iron was the right one for that island green today?
Yeah, I was warming up with the track man this morning and tried to hit a few shots with the same wind direction on the range. And I knew it was the same distance as yesterday, and I just sort of had that little three-quarter 9-iron dialed in. So once we got up there, I knew what to do and made a good swing.
So you mentioned it. I know you're a man of history. This is your 28th PGA Tour title. You're just the eighth multiple winner of the Players. How hard have you worked to get your hands back on this trophy for a second time?
Yeah, I have. I've worked really hard. I feel like I'm a way more complete player than I was a few years ago. Even in conditions like this, that little 9-iron into 17, the little 8-iron into the last there. I said to Harry there, you know, that little shot will take us a long way. So I feel like I can play in all conditions and anything that comes my way. And really happy that I was able to get it done today.
So that was Rory McIlroy. Yeah, third time winning on St. Patrick's Day. That's kind of funny. Luck of the Irish helping him out. He did not even have his best stuff this week. He wasn't hitting his driver as well. Hit it a bit better yesterday and this morning. That drive he hit on 16 was just flawless. But the pie was concerned. The putter went away on Saturday and a bit on the back nine yesterday. But he clearly is so talented and so good that he could have his B stuff and still win. And that, I don't even know if that was his B stuff. That might have been his C stuff. But still, it was good enough to win. I know in a playoff, that JJ Spahn story is pretty cool. But I think everyone there was rooting for Rory. Everyone was wearing green, had the St. Patrick's Day beads and everything. So he definitely had the crowd on his side, and it was just too much for JJ Spahn to overcome. Still, hell of a tournament for him. He's going to be a top 30 player now. Should get an invite to the Masters. So his career is definitely trending in the right direction. But if you're Rory, winning at Pebble Beach and TPC Sawgrass prior to playing at Augusta, that's got to give you a ton of confidence as he looks to complete the career Grand Slam. Quickly, before our first dad, we'll get into the National Hockey League just to break down the standings. And it goes like this in the Atlantic. Florida, Tampa, Toronto, Ottawa are the top four right now. Ottawa has won six in a row. The Senators have won six in a row, and that Dylan Cousins addition has just really helped out their lineup. Drake Batherson, if you watched the game Saturday, he was all over the place for Ottawa. Backchecking, getting in on loose pucks. He was just a wrecking ball. He got only one assist in the game, but it didn't matter. He was probably their best player on Saturday, in my opinion. He was phenomenal. That was a big win over Toronto there. Don't want to say safely in, but they got some breathing room now in the wild card race. And it's interesting, with the same amount of games played as Toronto, Toronto's lost two in a row now. They're only 4 points back of Toronto. So it's, don't rule it out that they could catch the Leafs, because they've played the same amount of games. And Let's be honest, they're red hot, and they are peaking at the right time. They got two really good lines now. You got Stützle with Tkachuk, Giroux, then they put Cousins with Batherson. It takes some pressure off Shane Pinto. It was a great addition by the Ottawa Senators. And what's really helping them out is Ullmark's played great. He had that phenomenal save on Mason Lowry Thursday against the Bruins, which was incredible. Was it against Detroit the other night? He had one of the best games of his career. I forget how many saves he had. It was remarkable. The Ottawa's playing great right now. And I want to get the exact saves he had the other night. He had 48 against Detroit. 48 saves on 49 shots on I believe that was on Monday, a week from today. He was awesome that game. Then he was great against Boston. Great Saturday against Toronto. And when it comes down to it, Linus Ullmark is, can he play well in the postseason? We've seen him in Boston have tremendous regular season success, but in the playoffs, he has not been himself. It led to Jeremy Swayman coming in Game 7 all those years ago. Last year, they played Ullmark Game 2, and they lost, and they stuck with Swayman last year in Boston. So let's see. He is undoubtedly the number one goalie in Ottawa, and the Senators have not had that goalie in the Tkachuk, Stützle, Sanderson, Shabbat era. They just have not had good goaltending. They thought it was going to be Matt Murray. They thought it was going to be Jonas Korpisalo. They give him all this big money. They end up trading for a proven Vezina winner in Linus Ullmark, and they are right now well on their way to going to the postseason. What's interesting now is what happens to that pack behind them. So quickly, the Metropolitan, you have Washington, 96 points. They're cruising. Carolina on 86 points, they're cruising. New Jersey should be in on 78 points. Then you kind of have the logjam in the wild card. So you have Ottawa, who's safely in right now. They got a buffer. They're on 77 points. And like I mentioned, their goal should be catching up to Toronto, if possible. Then you got the Rangers hanging around. Then you got Montreal hanging around. Columbus, Detroit, the Islanders, maybe Boston, Pittsburgh. Everyone was writing them off. They're on 66 points. They're 6 points out of it. No, there's not a lot of hockey left, but you never know. But that's probably where it ends. Boston's maybe the last team that has any kind of shot, and I don't like their chances. To me, it's going to come down to New York, Montreal, Columbus, Detroit. That's it. If the Islanders or the Bruins get hot, maybe. But right now, we sit here on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. Montreal, Columbus, Detroit are going to be battling with the Rangers for that last spot. I think Ottawa's in. I really do. I know they have some games left. They got 16 games left, but they got a 5-point buffer and 2 games in hand on New York. So I like their I really like their chances. And if Ullmark plays like this, and if Sanderson keeps playing the way he has, and Dylan Cousins and Batherson are making the impact on the second line like they're making, not to mention you have Tkachuk, Stützle, I think Ottawa gets in. I really do. The big, big, big story, though, out west is, what is the matchup going to be? Because Winnipeg's great. They're cruising. But Dallas and Colorado, not to mention you have teams like Vegas, Edmonton. Who's going to make the last wild card spot? It looks right now the playoff matchup is going to be Dallas and Colorado, which is just an outrageously good matchup. They played last night as well, and it was the Cale Makar show in Denver, Colorado, a 4-3 win for the Avalanche. He had 3 points. So it looks like we're going to get that again. Rantanen versus his old team. It's going to be great headlines. Can't wait for that. Winnipeg just keep winning hockey games. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10. But they've had playoff issues. We're not going to forget Hellebuck last year allowing I don't know how many goals against Colorado. But right now they'd probably play Vancouver, who are limping. I mean limping into the postseason. But here we are. We got Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado, they're all going to make the playoffs, and it looks like we're getting Dallas, Colorado. You got Vegas, who have not been great as of late. They're losing a lot of weird games. They're probably going to win the Pacific. Then you have, for the I don't know how many years in a row, this is going to be the fourth with Edmonton and LA in the first round. Then Minnesota looks to be in, and then it's just mayhem for the last spot. Vancouver, St. Louis, Calgary, maybe Utah. I say maybe. They've played two more games than Calgary, but those games in hand mean nothing if you don't win them. So I'll still include Utah in the mix. So you got three teams trying to catch Vancouver. So there's four teams battling, slimmer to the east, for that last wild card spot. Vancouver's going to be interesting, though. Pedersen's playing a bit better, but Hughes is, I don't know how healthy he is. That was a bad loss yesterday against Utah. They got a big game with Winnipeg coming up, big game with St. Louis coming up. The Canucks are an interesting story. They really are. But my hope, it's them or Calgary. I want some Canadian teams in the postseason. So let's see what happens. Jim Montgomery's done a great job in St. Louis. They were 7-2-1 in their last 10. I wish he was still behind the bench for my Bruins. Boy, they're really playing well. They hammered Anaheim yesterday, hammered Minnesota on the road, 5-1 on Saturday. So don't look past St. Louis. They've got talent on that roster. Binnington, maybe he's turned the page after the Four Nations. He was unbelievable in that overtime. We all remember. He looks like he's brought that play back to St. Louis, and they are not out of it by any means. So you got those four teams for the last wildcard spot. You got the four or five teams in the East battling for that last wildcard spot. I'm excluding Ottawa, but Montreal, they have a huge stretch coming up. Huge stretch. You have Ottawa on Tuesday at home. Then you got the Islanders, and then you got your hands full. Saturday, Colorado. Tuesday, in St. Louis. That's a big stretch. Then not to mention, you have Philly, okay. But Carolina's going to be tough on the road. Florida's going to be tough on the road, even though you've won there this season and beat them on Saturday. Then you have Florida again at home, and then Boston. So this is a huge stretch coming up for Montreal. If they can get a winning record from those games, they're in a good spot. But they have games in hand on the Rangers. They have games in hand on Detroit. And Columbus, they were a great story, but now they've kind of cooled off a bit. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Werenski's been unbelievable for them, but it's an interesting situation that's going on. Columbus are so hot and cold, 5-5 in the last 10, three losses in a row. Montreal's got a great opportunity to make that last wild card spot. If everything goes well, they have a great opportunity. And if you think about it, matchup-wise, they might rather play Washington than Florida. They might. And right now, it looks like that second wildcard team will be playing Washington. They got a crazy buffer in the Eastern Conference, not even close. And even in the league in general, they're right there. Them and Winnipeg, it's like not even close as the best teams. But having said that, there's still holes in the roster. It's a lot of players playing above their usual level. How are they going to play in the postseason? How's Chychrun going to play? How are these other young players going to play? Is Dylan Strome going to be good? Let's find out. Is Logan Thompson a true number one goalie? They're still I can't believe they're 44-15-8. They have 96 points, yet people still have question marks about Washington for the postseason. And it's fair. Absolutely fair. They haven't done it with this group. So that last wildcard team, whether it's New York, Montreal, they'd probably rather play Washington than the defending Stanley Cup champions in the first round. Quickly through the NBA before our first break, and man, it's really, really weird in the Western Conference. You have Oklahoma City, and everyone thought, oh, it's the Denver, the Lakers are going to be the team following them. How about the Houston Rockets? Six wins in a row. Six. Six. They're on fire. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Denver is just so hit or miss right now. I love Jokic. He's right there for MVP with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I just can't get a read on them. Same with Memphis. The Lakers, listen, Luka's putting on a show, but LeBron's out of the lineup. So when he comes back, what's going to happen? But we have to get into these two teams. The Golden State Warriors, who have won 7 in a row, and the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have won 8 in a row. So in the Western Conference alone, you have Houston, who right now is a 2 seed, have won 6 in a row. The Warriors have won 7 in a row. And the Minnesota Timberwolves have won 8 in a row. And for that, I mean, one of those teams whether it be the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Warriors, the Rockets, the Timberwolves, one of them's playing in the play-in, which is nuts. And they're playing great basketball. So the West is a bit of a gonk show. Jimmy Butler going to Golden State. What a move that was for the Warriors. Curry's just playing out of his mind. He finally has another star with him. He had in his past. I mean, the last few years, it's really just been an old Klay Thompson and Draymond. Andrew Wiggins is a fine player. He's not a Jimmy Butler. So they trade Wiggins. They get rid of the assets. They go get Jimmy Butler, and they have been red hot since his arrival in Golden State. So the Western Conference is interesting. You still obviously have Oklahoma City with a 13-game lead in the Western Conference. You go to the East, and it's a similar story. You have Cleveland with a big gap. Then you have Boston with a big gap. And then you have the Knicks, Milwaukee, Indiana, Detroit, which is a good story. I know they've lost two in a row, but they're going to make the postseason. The Hawks are hanging around there. But the problem is at the East, once you get after Detroit, it's like you got to find other play-in teams, unfortunately. Like, look at these teams. Atlanta, Orlando, the Heat have lost seven in a row. They're still in a play-in spot. The Bulls, the Raptors are at 11. They're only 4.5 back. If the Raptors get on a run, they could be in the play-in game. And we all seen how bad they are. Look at the bottom of that Eastern Conference. You have the 76ers who are 23-44. The Brooklyn Nets are 23-45. The Charlotte Hornets are 17-50. And the Washington Wizards, they take the cake in the Eastern Conference. They are an abysmal 15-51. 227 basketball. 227. Tommy, that must be the worst in the league. Nope. How about the West when you have the Utah Jazz at 15-53, 221? There is some awful teams in the NBA. To me, you have the East, it's Cleveland or Boston. That's pretty much it. That can win a championship. You go to the West, you have more. Oklahoma City, Houston. I think Denver can win. They have won in the past with Jokic. The Lakers can win with LeBron and Doncic. Absolutely, Golden State can win with Curry and Butler. There's options. But you look at the bottom of that conference, Orlando. You have the West. Sorry, you have New Orleans, Utah, and the East. The East is really bad. Like the Charlotte, Washington, Brooklyn, Philly. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. The NBA is a mess. You have the great teams at the top, like the what do you want to say, the four elite teams. I think there's four elite teams. I think Cleveland's elite. Boston's elite. Oklahoma City's elite. And you're going to laugh at me. I think the Rockets are an elite team. I do. They're deep. Ime Udoka's a hell of a coach. They play good defense. They're just, even their bad stretches haven't been for too long. But here's the thing. If you look at those teams, the only one with proven experience are the Celtics. I like the Lakers. I like Golden State. And honestly, if this makes sense, I like them in series against Houston, possibly against Oklahoma City. But if we're looking at regular season teams, teams that you're like, these are great regular season teams, Houston, Oklahoma City, Boston, Cleveland. But come playoff time, the only one I truly trust as we sit here on March 17th are the Celtics. Lakers, they can't stay healthy. It's a small sample size of Golden State. They look great, but it's a small sample size. And then Minnesota. They're not deep enough for me. I'm sorry. They're not. So right now, if I were to pick an NBA final, I'm going to take the Celtics to win it. And then the West, I don't know yet. I genuinely don't know. It should be Oklahoma City, but they're young. They're on the come up. Last year, they lost in the second round after having a great year. To me, I think Golden State, LA, and Denver, because of their experience, can easily beat those two elite teams in the West. So the West is far, far different from the East. There's a lot of outcomes that can come out of the Western Conference. The East, I'm 95% sure it's going to be Boston and Cleveland. And they play a good 6-7-game series to go to the finals, and I'd take Boston. And that's where I stand right now in the NBA. My quick little NBA, I don't want to say rant, but thoughts as we sit here on St. Patrick's Day. We're going to get into a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Jamar Chase, T. Higgins getting the bag from Cincinnati. Then we'll quickly talk about March Madness because it tips off on Thursday. Hope everyone's got their brackets printed out. You can join different leagues as well on ESPN and Capital One. I recommend that. It's great fun. So we'll talk some March Madness after the break, as well as T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, not to mention Derek Stingley from the Houston Texans. He becomes the highest paid corner in NFL history per year. 3 years, $90 million for him. So all those LSU guys, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Joe Burrow, Derek Stingley, all those guys from that 2019 team, they have gotten paid. They have gotten paid, which is which you knew. When watching those guys in college, it was just otherworldly watching them. You knew they'd be superstars in the NFL. So we'll get back, talk about those big contracts and March Madness. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick words from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Production Nuit d'Afrique invites you to discover new talent with its World Music Showcase, the 18th edition of Cité d'Or dans la musique du monde. Come discover 36 acts every Tuesday and Wednesday at Club Balatou until April 9th. Take part in the free showcase concerts and vote for your favorite artist. More info on Cité d'Or.com, Facebook, and Instagram.
Check out Jay Nice and Lady Oracle in the Limelight every Saturday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. for underground hip-hop and R&B right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Back here on Tommy John Show. Got to play the Irish artists today, right? It's only fitting. Only fitting. So, in the NFL, we had free agency last weekend, and I was a bit out of it because there's so much news coming in. Initially thought Milton Williams was going to Carolina. I'm like, oh, that was the Patriots guy. That kind of sucks. And then as soon as the show's over, I see, oh, he signed with the Patriots. I'm on the way home, and I just hear, I have my sports talk radio on, oh, Milton Williams not signing in Carolina, signing in New England. Oh, what the hell? So that was the tampering period. It's like, oh, what the hell? Are they actually signing? If teams hear they're signing, does another team jump in? And that's what happened. I was a bit out of it. I wanted Milton Williams in the worst way, and we got him. But on the show, when I'm like, oh, he's going to Carolina, oh, boy, I sound a bit sad, which is crazy to think. I mean, he's one player, he's a defensive tackle, but he's an impact player. And do my Patriots need impact players in the worst way? So that was a good sign. Like the Carlton Davis signing, like Spillane, like Harold Landry, Morgan Moses we needed to help Drake May. But the real headlines during free agency on teams' needs was based on what the original teams were going to do with their players. And going into the offseason, the big question mark was, where was T. Higgins going to go? Because Cincinnati have to pay Jamar Chase. He's the best receiver in football. They have to pay him. What are you going to do with T. Higgins? Well, Cincinnati, they franchise tagged him, but still, they could easily trade him on the franchise tag. They just don't want to lose him for nothing. That's understandable. But then the report came out late last week, around Thursday or Friday, I think, that said they're going to try and get a deal done. They're working to get a deal. And it shocked me because I like T. Higgins. He's a fantastic wide receiver. I hoped he went to New England or the Chargers made a lot of sense. I think he's a number one receiver. I do. But the Bengals already have a number one receiver. They have the best receiver in football, in my opinion, in Jamar Chase. Why do you need two number one receivers? Now, it's Joe Burrow's football team. Let's be honest. He for sure said, hey, why can't we sign both of them? Which is fair. But to me, the Bengals have so many other needs. So many other needs. You already have a star wide receiver who takes a ton of attention away from other receivers. Your offensive line's hit or miss. It's better than years past, but still not great. Chase Brown's an okay running back. But look at that defense. And you have a guy who led the lead in sacks in Trey Hendrickson, and I know he's a bit older, but you're in a championship window now in Cincinnati. I don't care if he's 30 or 31. He led the league in sacks last year. And your defense was woeful. And you're going to let him possibly go out the door. Or if you pay him, you're going to have zero money left anywhere else. You're paying $55 million for your quarterback. Now you're paying over, what, $40 million for Ja'Marr Chase. You're paying $28, $29 for T. Higgins. What do you think Hendrickson's going to want? It probably starts with a 2, maybe a 3. 25? 28? 30? It's a lot of money. And I know the cap's astronomical, but you need to have 50-something guys on a roster. And on three guys already, that's north of $100 million. Burrow, what, 55? Chase, 40 and change. So you're already at 95. And then you add Higgins at 28. You're well over 100. Well over 100. Right around that 120 range. On three players. That's almost half of your cap space on three players. And this is not basketball. This is not hockey. This is not baseball. You need to fill out a 50-something man roster under the cap. And yes, there's ways GMs have manipulated the cap, whether it's in bonuses or pushing money down the line. Howie Roseman, you know who I'm talking about. So maybe they're doing that and everyone gets to stay and it's great and okay, fine. But if I were Cincinnati, as great as T. Higgins is, I'm not spending that much money on two wide receivers. I'll spend it on Ja'Marr Chase. But the Bengals put themselves in this situation by not signing them when they were eligible for their contracts. They could have signed Chase last season for what Jefferson could have got. They could have signed Burrow, maybe at a cheaper number. They definitely could have gotten T. Higgins at a lower number. This T. Higgins saga has been going on for years now. How many times is it franchise tag? One-year deal, franchise tag. It's never, this is at least 2 to 3 years where T. Higgins was pretty much out the door in Cincinnati if it wasn't for the tag. Let's be honest. That's exactly the situation. Every team in the league, I think, was linked to T. Higgins over the last few years. Definitely the Patriots were, the Chargers were, the Rams were. Teams all over the place were linked to T. Higgins. Kansas City, teams were always interested, understandably, in T. Higgins because he's a great player. But it was such a long, drawn-out saga that everyone thought he was just going to leave. And honestly, I would have let him leave. I would have traded him, get something in return. But paying him close to 30 and Chase 40 when your defense is that horrendous is shocking to me. And you can always upgrade your offensive line. And I know the draft's coming up and you can draft defensive players. Okay, great. But I'm just stunned that they're going to pay that for T. Higgins and drop that much money on two receivers. Not one. Two. And there's going to be a problem for teams like that coming up. Minnesota, when Jordan Addison's going to want to get paid. You're going to see that in Detroit. Jameson Williams, he's going to want to get paid. And you have St. Brown there. I mean, it's interesting. George Pickens is going to come up for a deal. So it's interesting, the NFL, how these situations are going to go down. But T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase is the best duo in the league. I'm not saying that. But I've thought, based on the issues the Bengals have had over the years, that they wouldn't sign both of them. You had to sign Chase. You had to. But giving Higgins basically $30 million a year to be your second wide receiver when you can get good wide receivers in the second, third round, maybe not a T. Higgins level, but a good player, is shocking to me. Now, don't get me wrong. They're going to be a high-powered offense. They're going to score. They're going to look like the Bengals of years past. But they have to hit on these draft picks. They have to. Because if they whiff on these defensive players in the draft, which is how they have to draft, let's be honest. If they don't hit on those draft picks, they're going to be in the same situation they were this year. Great offense, Joe Burrow, MVP numbers, but they keep losing these games. Because Cincinnati might score 35, their opponent might score 41. Or, hey, Joe Burrow played great, he scored 31, they'll score 34. It's that's what the Bengals were last year. That's who the Bengals were 2 years ago. And I know they got my guy from Notre Dame, Al Golden, new defensive coordinator, Al Golden. Okay, he's great. But if he doesn't have the talent or the personnel in his defense, it's going to be a long year for him. So for me, I would have prioritized Hendrickson over T. Higgins, spread the wealth over different position groups. He led the league in sacks. He was a game changer. I would have prioritized that. I'm just saying. But now in the draft, there are no two ways around it. The Bengals have to use every single draft pick on a defensive player. And at least half of them have to hit. Your first, second, third, whatever draft picks the Bengals have, just draft defensive players. And they made the hard decisions in the past. They made Jesse Bates go away. Look what he's done in Atlanta. He's a hell of a safety. They let Joe Mixon go. He had a great year in Houston. So they've made tough decisions, but it hasn't always worked out. And I just don't like the idea of them getting rid of Trey Hendrickson. Now, they could look at the age difference. Higgins is in his mid-20s. Hendrickson's older. Joe Burrow wants his two number one receivers. Okay, but you can ask Joe Burrow. You can ask Jamar Chase, you can ask all these guys why they lost games last year, and they'll look at their defense, and it is a glaring hole, and they haven't addressed it in the slightest. Hell, it's going to get worse if Trey Hendrickson leaves, the lone bright spot on that defense. So I would have took care of that first. I would have paid Jamar Chase, paid Hendrickson, and I would have traded T. Higgins, and we can maybe get a receiver in the later rounds to fill in. Or, hey, you're Joe Burrow. You're a top three quarterback in the NFL. You have a number one receiver. Can you work with Yoshi Voss? We signed Gesicki. You had great numbers with him. And another thing with T. Higgins, it's not like he's the most durable wide receiver. He's been in and out of the Bengals lineup for some time. And when he's healthy and he plays, he's great. But there has been several times when T. Higgins in big games has not been there due to his injury history. He's gotten hurt in big games before, had to come out. But Jamar Chase has always been there in the big games. And he won the Triple Crown last year. You have to pay him. But I am stunned that they paid both of those guys before Trey Hendrickson. I keep saying both those guys. I'm stunned that they paid T. Higgins before Hendrickson based on that defense. Because with Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase alone, you're going to score points. And then, you know, these NFL guys are going to, if they hear me, be like, yeah, but T takes so much heat off Jamar. You know, Jamar Chase gets double teamed. It's more the other way around. How would T. Higgins look if there's not a Jamar Chase on the other side? Now, don't get me wrong. They're both sensational. But I think you cannot win a Super Bowl unless you hit on your entire draft class, which could happen, but it's highly unlikely. But you cannot win a Super Bowl, hell, even make the playoffs, the way the Bengals are constructed right now. And last year was a perfect example. You cannot score 40 every single game. You can't. That defense was so bad. And to have Hendrickson leave, I don't know. To me, you have to fix that defense. You have to. So let's see what the Bengals have planned. They're going to be a fun offense, though. My goodness. T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow. Maybe they take a running back in the draft. It's a very deep running back class. Who knows? Let's see if they get Trey Henderson done. This is a huge, huge draft for the Bengals, though. They need to hit on some defensive players. They need to. We're going to do a quick break. When we come back, I will preview March Madness as it tips off Thursday. Cannot wait for that. We will get into it after the break. I'm Tommy Lane for Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Hi, I'm Sydney Sheedy.
And I'm Piper Curtis.
We are the producers of Discordia, a 10-part audio docuseries for CJLO 1690 AM, funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada Radio Meters Program.
Tune in on Monday, March 10th at 6 p.m. for the 7th episode of Discordia on the 2023 crew campaign and how they became Concordia's new teaching and research assistant labor union.
It's a miserable Friday night. I'm so lonely, and nobody will give me a ride to the Grateful Dead concert. Oh, rats.
Don't fret. There's always Brave New Jams, your source for the best in improvisational rock and roll. That's Brave New Jams, Saturday, 10 p.m. till midnight, on CJLO 1690 AM, CJLO.com.
Back here on the Tommy John Show, a little Irish music for you guys. Irish artists, I should say. March Madness tips off on Thursday. And everyone who does the bracket, at least in my friend group, is always optimistic. Feels like they have the answers to the test on who's going to make the Final Four. And it never really goes that way. Sure, we have people who pick the winner right or pick two Final Four teams. But it is so hard to get the Final Four teams. It really is. But this year in basketball, in college basketball, just the brief amount of college basketball I've watched, it seems like it's very top heavy. There's not a lot of depth, I'm hearing, in the tournament this year. The SEC was phenomenal this year. You had Florida who won the conference. You have Auburn who's the number one overall seed. You have Alabama. You have Tennessee, Texas A&M. There's great schools in the SEC for basketball that all can easily win the national championship. So if my quick little assessment is, if you see the SEC, there, I would take them. I would. It's just been a phenomenal conference this year. That's what I'm hearing. The other thing I'm hearing is stay away from the Mountain West, which I don't know why they're saying that, because there's a lot of good schools from the Mountain West and have had success in the past in the tournament. But that's what I'm hearing. So I don't know why that's the case. There's just, I watch the big conferences. I haven't really focused on the Mountain West, but that's what I'm hearing. And another thing I'm hearing is don't buy the Michigan hype, which kind of freaks me out because Michigan won the Big Ten. They had big wins over the weekend. And normally, if a team's playing well going into the tournament, you ride them a bit. But let's be honest. Michigan's been up and down the entire year. The entire year. And they were a prime candidate for a lot of people to get bounced early in the tournament. And they win the Big Ten. And now people are like, oh, maybe Michigan's better than we thought. I don't think so. Don't buy Michigan. It was a lucky thing. I don't know. So this is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing the SEC, and I've seen the SEC. All those teams are outstanding. The SEC is going to be hard to beat. Michigan, even though they won the Big Ten, don't fall in love, and don't trust the Mountain West. That's what I'm hearing. But I'm also hearing that Michigan State got a good draw. Iowa State can be a problem. And obviously the big story is Patino and St. John's, because he has completely turned that program around. They're a number two seed, had a phenomenal year winning the Big East. They rolled through that tournament to win the Big East. So it's interesting to see what St. John's does. And man, I just don't, you never know in this tournament. And normally, I loved Auburn. When I was watching Auburn in February, they were beating Alabama on the road. They were getting great wins. Great wins. But they've really cooled off down the stretch. Really cooled off. And they did not look good against Tennessee the other day in the SEC tournament. They did not. But don't buy the Mountain West. That's what they're all saying. Oh, I don't know. Really? I'm not going to buy the Mountain West? New Mexico, Colorado State, don't buy them? Okay, fair enough. I just don't know. Like, you got to think there's going to be some upsets. This year I'm hearing, oh, there won't be as many upsets. There will probably maybe not be any upsets. That never happens. So it's going to be interesting. I'm definitely going to favor the SEC. It's what I've seen. I love Florida. They've been playing awesome basketball the last few weeks. They really have. Really awesome. Then you got to look at Auburn, even though they've played poorly. Then you got to look at Alabama and Tennessee and all those schools, Texas A&M, all those ones. So if we just quickly look at the bracket, Auburn, that Louisville-Creighton game is going to be fun. Then the one everyone's circling as their upset, like we mentioned, is Michigan. They're playing UC San Diego, and UC San Diego leads the country in forced turnovers, and Michigan turns the ball over. All the experts are telling me that one, so that's one I'm going to keep my eye on. Texas A&M in that top side, Ole Miss, and then the big controversy, San Diego State will be playing North Carolina for a spot in the tournament. And all the college basketball experts I've heard of and what they've been telling me is North Carolina should not have made the tournament. They should not. They're not a good team. Ohio State should have made it in over them. Indiana, West Virginia, those schools should have been in over North Carolina. But North Carolina's in and they're talented. They still have a very talented team. So if they get in, look out, because if they beat San Diego State, people like them against Ole Miss. So I'm going to be watching out for that one. Michigan State got a very favorable draw. They have the New Mexicos of the world, the Marquettes. They could easily make the Elite Eight. Then you got Florida and that in the South region. Memphis, Colorado State, that's one people have told me about. And then the big story, like we mentioned, is St. John's. They're in just a crazy part of the bracket because it's them, Kansas, Arkansas, Texas Tech people love. Imagine you get Calipari and Patino in the second round with Arkansas and St. John's. That'd be fun. Then obviously a lot of money is going to be thrown on Duke. If Cooper Flagg comes back, which he will, they're undoubtedly the most talented team in the country. But they've had injuries. They've been a bit up and down. I know they won the ACC. They're a one seed. But that Cooper Flagg injury, let's see how healthy he really is. So that's interesting. Another team I've heard from that side of the bracket is Alabama, obviously. But that you have to watch out for Vanderbilt. They could easily do some damage in that side, which is totally possible. Then you head finally to the last portion, and the number one seed in the bottom's Houston. And they've played great down the stretch. Won the Big 12. They're going to be fun to watch. But they have some big schools in there. They have Tennessee and UCLA in their side as well. So it's going to be very interesting. Great show. We're back next Monday. We will recap the first weekend of college basketball. Hope everyone enjoys that of the March Madness. And we are 1 week closer to the NHL and NBA playoffs. So we will continue to talk about the major headlines there. And remember to follow us on Instagram at The Tommy John Show. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and we will see you all next week.